Welcome to another episode of Coffee Conversations with myself, Vivian Trini, a podcast where we tell beautiful musical stories. And as with any other episode, this one, I have one of the most incredibly talented musicians that I have experienced. He is a jazz scholar. He is a pianist. He is an amazing and brilliant singer. He is a composer and he is a teacher. Yonela Mnana, welcome to Coffee Conversations.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm okay. You know, thanks for inviting me here.
Thank you for coming.
I was actually looking at the thing, that you sent me on. I was like, hey, I'll be in good company, you know. So it's really beautiful.
Thank you so much for coming. So I think what I always want to do is paint a picture for the person listening of the beginning of your journey in music. I know that you grew up in the Southeastern Cape, which is Transkei. I hope I got that right. Or is it the Northern East side of of Eastern Cape? I'm sorry to my Xhosa people there. But I know that you grew up in Transkei and you went to a boarding school for the blind in Limpopo, which is where I'm from, actually. But I think let me give you the platform to kind of like paint a picture of a young Yonela growing up and discovering this thing that we call music today.
Yeah, I don't have, like, you know, one of those culminating moments where there's an enlightenment. But I think it's always been a cumulative process where, you know, as a black person you in South Africa, there is no other way but becoming musical. I think in many respects, we're all musicians, you know. Others are much more good in terms of appreciating other ones. I'm more gifted in getting invested in how to produce it. So I suppose we all have to do those different kinds of function in terms of music. So I was just born there in the Eastern Cape. In fact, that time Transkei was kind of a different state away from South Africa, although it was a part of South Africa. It was part of those TBVC, you know, Transkei, Botswana, Venda, and Ciskei, which were the states that were created by that apartheid system that were trying to lure most of the black people away from these townships and away from the urban areas to go and live there. And they would, you know, what do they call them? It was like a system that they create for themselves to self-determine, although the government was the one that was investing a lot of money. It's almost like they were creating reserves for black people. You know? That's why a lot of them needed like a pass. If you came to Transvaal or, you know, one of those urban areas, they were surprised because you didn't want to stay where they wanted you to stay. So, I mean, I feel like that actually every time I have a passport, it's almost like they force me to come and ascertain my legitimacy to, you know, to a specific geographical location. So, yeah, which means that when I was born, my mother had to actually go abroad to South Africa, you know. So, and then my grand was in Pretoria already, so I grew up there. And, I mean, that was already there, you know, the child of the 80s. So the big dudes, you know, Brenda, Chico, Andre Zikubu, all those guys, that music, you know, that was also the beginning of that bubblegum stuff. So I think most of us as the 80s were targets of all kinds of sounds. Remember that the SABC had their own agenda. They would bring, you know, these localized sounds, but also they would make sure that we have a lot of American styles, you know. I mean, that was the beginning of the R&B, the era of R&B here, you know, with Luther and with Two Men and Mariah Carey. So by the time, you know, I get to my teens, you know, those are the things that, you know, you get to experience. You get to become a part of that group that tries to transcribe the lyrics in English according to you, you know. Where whatever phrase, whatever that is fine. Michael Jackson, all those people. So yeah, and also, I mean, that was kind of like the tail end of the anti-apartheid struggle. So which means we would also get to hear all those struggle songs as well.
Mm.
So imagine being in Mamelodi around those periods. I mean, that is the town that boasts, I mean, that place boasts a lot of great artists. Was Mahlasela's from there, Don Laga's from there. You know, and even Kushen's mother is from there.
Mm.
Remember that lady? I think she's in Skimsam now. So it's a land of, you know, of artistry, obviously Mamelodi.
Mm.
Gently referring to melodies.
Yes.
So Philip Tabane as well. So, yeah, and I mean, I was still navigating myself too, you know. Because I remember my grand used to actually send me to go and get coke at, I think that house was like, what, the ninth house from here.
From yours.
Yeah, and now that I think about it, you know, I don't know if I would have done that to my child, but which means that she allowed me to, you know, to gain my own freedom and independence geographically without having to stress, to think about it from a different level. So, and yeah, I always talk about it. I mean, in fact, one of the other EPs, I've got another house EP, you know. I mean, I know you're a teacher, so I'll bring your attention to, you know. I did like a small EP, you know, because with this corona thing, we all become bedroom studio musicians.
Yes.
So I did like a 45, you know, BPM kind of songs. And I was tributing another guy called Rabita. Rabita was one of the guys in the street who, you know, was always the first one to receive new releases.
Mm.
Remember, there was Shabarangs.
Yes.
There was a Straight Lindab, I think, when it came through. And when he got these songs, obviously, there was that culture of putting the speaker outside. I don't know if that stuff is still in practice now. But which meant that he made sure that he took care of the oral nutrition of the street, you know.
Mm.
We kind of tacitly let him give us, well, even when, Aliyah, I think, was the Beckett one, no.
Mm.
Sinyaka. This is kind of like the experiences sonically, you know, that I was just going through. And remember, because I was oscillating from there, from Mamelodi to Pietersburg, which was a boarding school, and which means it comes with all sets of different sociological backgrounds as well. Because a lot of the students that were there came from a different musical background. Most of them used to have small Scotania groups, even if we did it in Spain, but it was like, you know, different background. There was Peter Tinet there, Papa Benny was still coming through.
Mm.
So imagine moving, you know, between those two ones.
Yeah.
And because boarding school, it was a Catholic school, which means it came with its own musical baggage.
Yes.
Of church songs and wedding songs from there. So somehow, myself as well, I'm kind of like a melting pot of all those kinds of influences. Mm. So that was, you know, and children are incredible in adapting.
Yes.
In fact,
yes.
I find that now when I create, my wealth is attained when I have to go back.
Mm.
So the only way for me to go forward is to take my future from my history.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, I love that. That is so, so powerful. And so I love that. I love how you are able to take us back. It felt for me like I was a part of those experiences. Mm-hmm. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love that. So you got to the boarding school and you were part of a choir, if I'm correct. Tell me about that experience in itself, having it being a Catholic school and that experience in itself and how it has shaped you to be the musician that you are today.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you, the place is called Atwin. You're Atwin yourself.
So. Tuaneng. Yeah, I know exactly what it is.
Tuaneng.
Oh, school. My God.
There's a school, it's called Silwe.
Yes.
By Frederas. So there's like a Frederas is a school for, you know, for the sighted one.
Yes.
And I knew, because, I mean, it's you know, you had to actually walk for about like 30 minutes to get to the main road.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the school was started by, I think, one of the Europeans, I think.
Yes.
But in 1951. And I think the idea is to kind of like be non-obtrusive to say they actually are going to the rural of ruralist area.
Yes.
To shed the light of the Lord, you know, proverbially speaking.
Yeah.
So obviously it came, like you're saying, it came with its church has its own Western, you know, Western music.
With, yes, yes.
With its four-part things with, you know, the ladies have to have their top two parts.
So mm.
Guys, and I mean,
tenor.
Yeah.
And lip bass.
Yeah, tenor lip bass, you know. And which is interesting. I mean, if you put that and juxtapose it with what happens with other cultural musics where our people are doing it differently.
Mm.
You know, I was listening, there's a guy called Johannes Mohlala.
Mm.
And Mohlala plays like a harp kind of like instrument. Was one of the top exports from Polokwane. And he's got his own traditional group. In fact, in the late 80s, he was very famous. Obviously, won't be known in South Africa. But the guys, obviously, I'm sure he was backed by some white person that really appreciated him. And that must tell us something also about how we develop aesthetics. I think in South Africa, the things that we love them because somebody brought those things to our attention.
Mm, mm.
So unlike other people in other countries where they actually follow their passion, where they choose what they want, not by default.
Mm.
And that means that it's almost like we become blank canvases until somebody comes and colonizes us. Which means you need to start questioning also the kind of things that you like, whether you love them because those are the only things that were at your disposal, or whether you're actually, you know, chasing after them.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, the choir was there. Obviously, choir practice was very compulsory, like a lot of other things. I think we attended twice a week. I was in the junior choir and the senior choir, which is weird, you know, because now I'm actually at the Morris Isaacson Center for Music.
For music, yes.
And, you know, I'm choir director now, so it's like I came full circle.
Yeah.
And I'm charged with studying the choir, and I'm trying to kind of like avoid the, you know, the culture and decolonized how we've experienced our choral experiences.
Mm.
Of course, I mean, now we have to actually start something that these kids are not used to, because what people know as a choir is different to what I understand as a choir in my history.
Mm.
I mean, now, you know, now there's like your Ndlovu choir or whatever. All the
yes, things. Yes.
And people, you know, don't even know about Sarafina, you know?
Yeah.
They don't know about, you know, Barorisi. All those very special choirs, they don't know about Gibson Kente. So we have to do that. There's so much to inculcate, but there's less time because
yes.
Everybody, I think that's the sad part about the being in the post-apartheid era. What united, I mean, the struggle really united a lot of black people and because it gave them a common goal. And by the time we thought we were having freedom, I think everybody else who had a product now became free to throw it at us.
Mm.
So now we don't have time to be quiet to choose what we want.
So
the commercial people are the ones that have the freedom to usurp our spaces. I mean, now, if you think about it, there's a lot of sound pollution now.
Mm.
If even at the most silent of your level, there's always a buzz.
Yes.
Imagine all those musicians in the 18th century. The kind of music that they made was also affected by the silence that they were experiencing.
Yeah.
So that music is different. That's why nowadays you have to have a mic and big sound systems and push it to your audience.
Mm.
The audience doesn't no longer has a choice to go towards the music. We have to turn out. I mean, my brother would know, even if you check the general levels of sound editing in the past, the sound was a bit gentler because it allowed you to want it.
Mm.
Nowadays, we are forced to imbibe the stuff.
Yes.
So which means there's a different way of... So, and that affected, like you're saying, with the choir, how, you know, how we were learning how to produce our voices. And in a sense that I think most of us were able to really project much more because we had much more space to do that and we didn't have to project it mechanically with the microphones and stuff.
Mm.
And I mean, after that choral experience, I remember because even the evenings then we had like Ingoma Ksu in a Petersburg way, where Stratamir was sung and people were actually composing by themselves. Imagine at the secondary school level. That was quite incredible now that I think about it.
Mm.
And people were so jealous of their own music, you know, they took it very seriously. And I remember because sometimes we would have like one or two people that were singing baritone. All the other groups would need that person. So when there was a concert, there was a whole thing that you have a promiscuous vocalist.
Yeah.
And, you know? So that was where I came from. So eventually, so if you fuse that thing with the influence from Petersburg, with the influence that was imported from America, with the township influence, then I actually decided, obviously, I wanted to do music. Mm. So unfortunately, we had a teacher. Thanks to our SRC, we demanded to have a music teacher for extramural activities.
Oh,
that's
wow.
How we got kind of like get introduced to the piano.
Mm.
And obviously, contrary to, our parents' expectations.
Yes.
And warnings and reprimands that you're going to be hungry.
Yeah.
Which actually turned out to be true, you know? So, yeah. So, maybe one would call it a calling. I don't know, but
I love that.
This is what we have. And I mean, by the time I had to go to bed, obviously they have their own curriculum. It's like, as a Black South African, whatever that you do, it's almost like there's more than a dual process.
Mm.
When you're at school, they kind of, if you're doing media studies or you're doing accounting, there is the kind of accounting that you do on the side that is away from the school that goes hand in hand with what you're doing,
yes.
So there is a kind of like a coping mechanism that we have to adopt, even in terms of how we learn the English language, for example.
Mm.
How, to adopt what you hear from your Metro FM and your YFM. And now with the social media, the language that is there and the language that you have to use for your essay and the one that you... So
we're
making overtime.
Yeah, we're overloading our brains at the same time.
So, just to bring it back even to myself. So it means already by the time we get to learn to go to universities, we are already richer as artists, but we are not aware.
Mm.
And as soon as we surrender ourselves by allowing these people to examine us and give us these degrees, somehow we begin to denigrate what we have that we were given naturally because we get to use a rubric that doesn't respect your previous experience.
Hmm. So, you are actually a well of wisdom. You're sharing your story, but at the same time, you're dropping some gems there. So you are both a singer and a pianist. Mm-hmm. And you speak about, discovering the piano while you were in school.
Mm-hmm.
And you are an amazing pianist, by the way. And so when I was listening to some of your music, there's a deep yearning and calling that comes with song. Tell me about discovering your voice completely and your sound.
Such a very interesting story because, like I'm saying, we've always modeled ourselves, against Americans and stuff. And in time, someone was suggesting, he said, man, sometimes maybe you must record yourself so you can hear exactly how you sound. And obviously, the first time you get to hear how you sound, no one would like that.
Yeah.
But that you don't like that because the goal is to be someone else.
Yeah. Oh, wow, actually.
So the first point of discovering is actually the point of self-acceptance first. This voice that you have is the only voice that you were given. You might as well. It's the same as body shaming. If somebody says that you sing badly, it's like he's inside. What else can you do? This is the only thing that you have. So, yeah, I had to sit with myself. In fact, because that was something that I have taught myself, because when I was 30, I had to sit down at home with a specific album and start, you know, going note by note, just being in detail to say, what is the gap between what my mind intends to do and what my body tries to figure out, you know, and how I hear it. So there's always those kind of like three levels of the process. Do I enjoy what I'm doing before I expect somebody to enjoy it? Because that's an important thing. So somehow, just like the mirror, it's almost like your ear has to become your own mirror. You have to kind of like be a part. What do they say? You have to have an out-of-body experience.
Yes.
To be able to appreciate yourself and to enjoy yourself so much that even when nobody appreciates it, you know you've already given so much to yourself. So the artistry becomes a gift that gives to you. And if it gives to the other person, it's even already a bonus.
Ooh. Whoa. Wow.
So that's...
Needs a moment.
That,
yeah. Whoa.
So that fascinated me. Like, I was like, wow, man. It's amazing. And because it's harder to document what you receive from yourself, the people that are so-called the best or that are awarded are awarded based on how other people receive them. They're not awarded in terms of how they receive themselves.
Wow.
I mean, if you take, say, for example, the cliche of people selling their souls or whatever, people that are willing to project themselves or to dress less or to act funny for popularity, is the value that they are getting, the monetary value that they are getting, equal to the value that they are giving to themselves as they do those things. So it's a proverbial crossroading where you get to the crossroads where you get either fame and fortune or whether you get, you know, peace of mind. I mean, we're all kind of like navigating these things because unfortunately, because our musical activities have now been related, you know, with money or with valued in terms of cash, it is still, the jury is still out on whether what people are willing to compensate you, if that is the case, whether that's equal to the value that you're bringing out, or whether we are allowing somebody else to use a different aesthetic of judging what you can bring, you know? Imagine, right, if all of us were judged according to Zimbabwean standards of music appreciation. Imagine how your top 20 would be. The same way that we choose the music that we love, it's the same way that we need to inquire on the aesthetics that we use to judge the music that we think we love. Whether we are allowing imperialist Americans and Europeans to define how we get to love ourselves according to their standards or not. You know? I mean, why as a child were you able to get some sleep through your mother singing? Why is that not at the top 10? Why would her singing be much less appreciable than that of Beyonce, for example? I mean, a lot of people have paintings of people that they don't know, but they don't even have pictures of their grands at their own houses. So we still have challenges in terms of how we get to appreciate ourselves, because there's still like I was saying, in terms of how I didn't appreciate what I was doing, is because there's always this other standards that someone has put.
Placed on, so yeah, yeah.
The concept of what is judged to be universal is false.
Mm.
Because it depends on who says that it's universal.
Mm.
If somebody says what you're doing is unprofessional, what is he measuring it against?
Yes, yes.
If some people would be saying, why would you say, for example, you're too friendly for your professionalism? Almost as if coldness is the standard of professionalism.
Yeah, yeah.
But to other people, in fact, in the true nature of things, remember, in how we imagine ourselves in our cultures, people stayed as one big family before, right?
Mm.
So your uncle, as a boy, when you grow up, your uncle would be your teacher. Your uncle is the one that probably would circumcise you. The uncle is the one that would teach you how to hunt.
Mm.
And your uncle is the one that is going to get a woman for you. As a girl, the uncle does the same. So we have always been different kind of values to each other as one.
Mm.
So the idea of, say, professionalization or being one kind of person is actually diminishing the capabilities of what we are to each other.
Hmm.
You know? So you can be my sister and my mentor
mm.
and my advisor and my investor.
Mm.
But the normal culture doesn't suggest that we should look at each other like that.
Like
and
that,
I'm saying,
yes,
perhaps also we have to think differently in terms, like you were saying, if you can hear a different kind of yearning
mm.
from the music that I'm doing,
mm.
it's because there's a specific point of departure that is common amongst us as hmm. Black people in South
mm.
Africa that is unappreciated
mm.
by those people that give awards
mm.
because they don't respect that the music is not the notes and the volume
mm.
and the sound. That perhaps the kind of screams that we are doing, the kind of longing that we get to project. So when I do my music, it doesn't become mine. It mm. is just me that has the privilege of doing it, but I'm doing it on behalf of everybody.
Hold it right there. Sure. So as you're speaking, right,
mm.
I'm reminded of something that you said in one of the interviews where mm. you say that we need to be more listeners
mm.
than players
of
the music. So I want you to actually bring us to a point of the spirituality mm-hmm. that comes with music
yeah.
and what that looks like for you.
Well, that is the only true form of music.
Mm.
Unfortunately, music has been, when, as they teach us, they've subdivided it into notes and instruments and whatever. But those are just trivial things that have to lead us to the actual music.
Mm-hmm.
Once it becomes something beyond those things,
hmm.
then it becomes music.
Hmm.
That is why when we listen to it, we already get the direction of what we have to do.
Hmm.
So it's the highest level, you know, of humbleness.
Hmm.
Because what you decide to do in response is guidance from someone else who is not you.
Hmm. Hmm.
So that's why, but if you can't listen to what you're doing, then I don't know what you're doing. Imagine, but it's like writing for somebody that's not going to read it.
Mm.
That's what I was saying.
Mm.
If I can't appreciate what I'm doing,
huh.
then why would I expect someone else to do that? I mean, I expect people that are in catering to be great lovers of food.
Yeah.
Not yeah. to be great suppliers of food.
Mm.
They must supply it as a result of how they have, what they appreciate
mm.
in terms of what they produce. So yes, music is always spiritual.
Mm.
Anybody that understands it to be different, maybe is in the marketing department. They just doing it for marketing. So yes, music is like, I mean, nature is amazing because we always think that we can't know what we are thinking, what we are feeling inside. But God has given us so much, so many ways.
Huh.
You can see a person through his eyes, and you can hear a person through their sound. You can feel what they're feeling through touching them. You know, imagine how they feel through how you move with each other as you dance, you know, publicly and privately. We can feel each other. It's already there. So the music is one of the other ways of touching each other, not just orally, you know, but touching each other's hearts as well. And I think it's a privilege that we must really feel humble to have. Because that doesn't any... I mean, imagine if you hear a child, you know, child singing. You can cry because you can actually imagine, you can feel where they at. You can feel the kind of innocence
that comes with going it. Through.
Like you're saying, you can hear the yearning. So what I've been wanting to do as I listen to other great musicians is exactly that factor that help you to answer the question, why would people be listening to you when they've got so much music on their phones and on their radios? What is it that is so special that they must make them take out what they've got, the limited resources that they've got, to come to your show? It means you must be able to at least get to your center, to your core, and offer them your vulnerability. That's all.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So I remember quite vividly the first time I experienced you, and I was watching House on the Hill.
Ah, yes. Oh,
and to date, that's still one of my favorite things to watch, of your performances. But I saw you recently, and you were playing with, again, one of my really favorite musicians, Rahebe Tswaedi, who's actually been on the podcast as well. He's a friend of the podcast. But I want you actually speak so fondly of Rahebe. And that is something on this podcast, what I call the meeting of musicians. You know, you guys come together and you exchange energy musically. Tell me about some of those experiences where when you step onto the bandstand and you are sharing musically with these other musicians, and what that feels like for you.
I often, you know, I think about, you know, how the origin of institutions. We can take Western European institutional building. Take a person like Plato or even Jesus. How they are able to perpetuate what they believe in is the fact that they started a culture where they get like-minded people and they get followers. They can call them disciples, you know. Remember, that's why eventually in universities there is a discipline, which means there's specific kind of guidelines that they follow, the specific principles that they commonly appreciate. And from following that discipline, they become, you know, there is a generation of knowledge. And I'm happy that, in fact, this is the only true university of South African music making, to be able to have the elders that are willing to say, come through, this is what we believe in, this is what we've been taught, come and receive this one. So the bandstand is the actual university.
Yes.
Is the actual, remember that Greek thing, you know, how they started to talk about the so-called academia with Socrates, Plato and them, Archimedes, Euclid, all those guys. It has been done, because remember, even that generation of knowledge was a carbon copy of what had been done in Egypt and what had been done in one of the oldest universities here in Africa, Timbuktu. And actually, I came across some information that was saying that time they would give you your degree after 20 years or so. Because it takes time to learn, to get to the truth. Because that time it wasn't a commercial institution. Now, knowledge is being sold, which means knowledge also has been watered down. So to be able to go on stage and share with these guys and breathe with them at the same time, it's not just a privilege, it's wealth. And if I would urge anybody that wants to study something that, like you're saying, we need to build these communities of knowledge, like you're saying. And I have been arguing at that point when I was doing my research for the masters at that time, to say that the generation of jazz piano, South African localized forms of jazz, is a result of the making of communities of knowledge where we share the same thing. So Braheli, I mean, I know as pianists, I talk to Africa, I talk to Andile, Yanana, I talk to, you know, to Tuduzo. We used to, actually, there was a point with Tuduzo that when I was still doing fourth year and when he just came to Joburg, we used to hang out a lot. Jam sessions at that time was one of the very sacred spaces where musicians would gather and challenge each other. And unfortunately, those cultures now have died, because apparently now you can only be successful if you are by yourself. This culture appreciates people that prefer to be individuals above others.
Yes, yes.
Where you would want to go to church and say that you are blessed by getting a job that your friend has lost. Where your blessings are dependent on you and you as an individual benefiting. We can't pray for each other. We are no longer moving communally. We have ascribed for this nucleus thing. That's why, if you think about it, many people, by the time they start wanting to settle and have their own partners, they start narrowing down their social field.
Yes.
So they are, you know, they are depersonalizing themselves to try and go for some ideal. Which is sad. Because we're always, our people, the idea of Ubuntu in itself is that. Nowadays, we don't even know what the community is, because we've got keys to lock ourselves away.
We've got high walls.
From the people. I mean, I was thinking, my son doesn't even know what it means to play in the streets. Because now we're even fearful of each other. Because we can't even have now legitimate ways of earning more wealth. The people that are much more wealthier than us are people that are willing to be unscrupulous, to go beyond. If you check, most of the people that are famous are people that are doing something beyond what you're doing. People that are willing to stand on top of tables. I mean, if you can't speak like this on TikTok and get likes, it's so ordinary, it's even boring. So we are taught to like the extraordinary, whatever it takes.
Sure. Wow. And I love what you say about the lack of sense of community. And I think even with the people that I surround myself with, with my friends, we speak a lot about how we have lost the sense of community. Gosh. Whereas with our parents, I can go down the street and auntie will give us sugar, you know. But having said that, let's talk about, you know, some of those musicians that have influenced you as a musician as well. And some of those that you'd still love to work with because you've, you know, you've engaged their work.
I mean, I love a lot of other. I want to do something for Steve Kegan, I think.
Oh, yes.
Steve. I was fortunate enough to get him to ask me to come and show him some things on the piano. But I mean, he was just saying he really doesn't have time. Yeah, that's also communal too. but I'm just saying, you know, it's incredible, because Steve, by the time they did this thing without the situation favoring them, and he was able to do something out of nothingness. And I like him because he went to the same school.
Yes.
And he was able to to be so universal beyond.
Yes.
I mean, I always talk about the two Steves in my life.
Yeah.
So that's Steve Kekana and then there's Stevie Wonder, you know?
Oh, yes. Oh, man, so, you have two Steves. Yes, I love that.
Yeah. So, and I mean, they kind of, you know, you were talking about the poignancy, you know, how you can hear the yearning in the music.
Mm.
The one thing that I had also with Richards and also with Parayan, I could also hear the joy too.
Mm.
I could hear them living in spite of the music. I think what we do now with our productions, we cut out the breaths, we cut out the things that we think are too human.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And I don't like you were saying about, I think what's special with the thing of jazz on the hill is that you get to experience me than my music.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we have to begin to have a drive of bringing music with the people that make them like that.
Mm.
So I love. So what Richard did with the blues to take it from it was, you know, from church and to be able to speak much more generally. I mean, Donny Hathaway is a very special person.
Oh, man, let's not even go there.
Yeah.
Oh.
I love Oscar Peterson. I love McCoy Tyler.
Yeah.
So all those guys, you know, I used to go to my mother's friend at Tembanyati, would listen to, you know, introduce me to Gibson Kente. And Gibson, kind of like, they have this, they embrace the choralism that was here, but they imbued it with some, with a jazzy interpretation, and they did it for the, because they did theater for the township, you know?
Mm.
Now, most of the art, we're doing it for other people that don't even live with us.
Mm.
So I'm doing a study on solo pianists now with this PhD.
Mm.
And so we can't go away from Abdullah Ibrahim, we can't go, you know, we can't go from Begum Sele, we can't go from Tony Shilder, Chris Shilder, all those Cape Town musicians.
Mm.
You know, we can't go from Pat Matigiza, or Wichona, all those. We can't go from Moses Mlelekwa.
Mm.
So, oh man, I mean, one of the guys that really helped me is Babu Themba Mkhize, was so amazing.
Bless his soul.
Yes, because he's one of the fewest people that has never raised their voices in anger.
Hmm.
And I think it's a tremendous,
that is so powerful,
skill that he has. I remember when I met him, in fact, I was called by Nduduzo because there was some event that we were doing and they wanted to do some Donny Hathaway cover. So I remember when I was not even in the band because it was a big band and I was just hanging, just listening to them. He found a way of including me in the thing and he was like, can you just count this song in? So he has a way of kind of like embracing. Was such a, he's such a great father figure, and he actually is one of the people that really encouraged us to go to school. I know in my case, I know in the case of Tuzo, and he was saying that they used to want to have this privilege. Now that this privilege is there, why are we not taking it?
Mm.
So, you know, I love how he does this. His music is, I love how rooted he is in terms of the music that he grew up listening to.
Mm.
And obviously the gift that he unwittingly passed on to his son, Afrika Mkhize.
Mm.
You know, what he's doing with the Rainmakers is really incredible.
Mm.
You know, obviously Duduzo is representing us there in the world.
In the world, yes.
We can never say it enough, you know?
Yes.
I know that if, you know, him being there, he's going to be there to be able to open the door for all the other people that
are willing to, oh, yes, to take 100%. That
route, you know?
Mm.
There's lots of other, I mean, I was helped out by other musicians, like you saying with Brahe Vitoedi, Faye Afaku as well. You know, these musicians not only shared their music and their knowledge, we had to go to their houses, you know, to meet their wives, to meet their sons.
Mm.
So, like you say, it is true that there is a necessity for us to build. In fact, It's true that there is a community that we don't acknowledge of musicians. I know gospel musicians also do that stuff. They help each other business-wise and whatever. So even with ourselves, because we know that we're a secluded minority. My friends, you know, that I work together with, Sisonke, we did an album.
Together.
Manda Mlangeni, you know, doing great things. Other ones that never recorded, like, I mean, Spiwe Shivuri is a great drummer as well. I love Talisu. Talisu is a phenomenal bass player. Very young and talented, you know. And there's just so many. South Africa, I was saying to someone, we are so spoiled for talent that
we can hear it
when we don't get enough.
Let me tell you. And I love that you say that. And it sounds to me like you are surrounded as an amazing and incredibly talented musician yourself. Mm-hmm. You're also surrounded by all these brilliant people that you also, you know, draw knowledge from. And I love that for you. I mean, to be surrounded by that for me is like, oh my God, my mind is absolutely blown.
Yeah, I think, I mean, isn't that the culmination of the manifestation of Ubuntu that we were talking about?
Mm.
The fact that a person's greatness is an aggregation of the surrounding artists.
Ooh.
Like I was talking about, the jam sessions.
I want to clap for that because,
Yeah, you can never be, what do they say, the British? No one is an island.
No man is an island.
Like, I mean, how you were telling me about, you know, how you get to do your work.
Mm.
There needs to be somebody that is unseen that will say, no, come here, let's do this.
Hmm.
There needs to be somebody that's doing the technical stuff.
Mm.
There needs to be somebody that, so we all have to come through for each other.
For each other.
To be able to lift each other up. I mean, I used to go to these jam sessions, you know, where there's Sydney Mnisi, Marcus, White, and who still is doing these jam sessions for us to discover each other. I mean, Nikki's, you know that venue at Nikki's?
Nikki's in Newtown.
It's been around for so long. I remember because I used to play there every
Saturday
when I was still a student.
Around.
And it's a stage where everybody, got to experience. I mean, the Orbit, obviously, we can't speak enough about
it. Let's not even.
The African Freedom Station, you know, Brother Steve used to take, I think he liked all those ones that, you know, whose names you don't know.
Mm.
And that's his specialty because most of us has explored. I've developed as a leader to say, oh, okay, just because of the many opportunities that you get to say, oh, this is what you know what doesn't work anymore.
Yes,
you know what works.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we don't get to have a lot of grassroots. Now, everybody, even now, somehow, even with the jazz industry, there is a lot of name calling and name dropping that is so unnecessary. That doesn't allow for new expression, for new talent.
Yeah.
Why are we not, like in the other, you know, with the other nations, why don't we have a vibrant new 17-year-old piano player, a vibrant new 18-year-old saxophone player? That's why is the definition of our youth different from the other people? The young and talented person has to be 30 years. No, that's a problem. It means we're not investing back because most of us are beginning to find our feet even at our latest stages because there is no platform that is willing to. And that's why I like teaching because we need to discover them while they're still much more younger. And not only should we teach them, but we must be able to avail the resources.
Yeah.
Because that is actually at the central position of somebody's, you know, learning curve. To have access. Access is the most important thing before information.
Yes.
Think of, you remember that time when people used to have those six months computer courses but they didn't have computers at their house?
Yeah.
I mean, it's ludicrous. You know? And that's why other cultures, I mean, they make sure by the age of 8, the child gets a pony as a gift.
As a gift, yes.
Which means already he's got a means of transport. By 11, 12, you get a rifle, which means if the family passes on, you've got the means of transportation and you've got a means of getting yourself some food. You're alive. So we need to empower each other like
that
to help ourselves with the most basic things that we need from each other.
I love that.
I mean, that's what you're doing now. I mean, what you're doing is to document these things so that next time when we've got younger, and I think that's another thing that you can target in the sense that you don't have to just have random audiences, but you need to have institutions as part of your audience, because what you're doing is to build a curriculum as well, an alternative decolonial curriculum for local students that don't have access or that are only looking to the Europeans or to the Americans for information. This is the library.
Sure. You, like, we can end this conversation right now because... Oh, man. You know, you actually remind me so much of Ubuntuzo. Like, he was actually the very first guest on this podcast. And it was a beautiful conversation. And you're actually taking me back to that. But let's then talk about your bodies of work. You know, you have your debut album, which you released in 2016, Baba, and then you have worked with Usisonke, who's actually also been on this podcast. I've had really amazing people on here. And so that body of work is so highly meditative. But let's talk about, you know, the process, the making of, and how it came together. And you're more than welcome to touch on both yours and Sisonke's if you wish.
Well, I mean, there's different processes. You know, I felt when I was doing my album, because I did it actually 4 years before the release. So that was 2012. I was still about, 29 or something. So it was more of a releasing of a backlog.
Okay.
Remember that the process of recording has to do with finance as well.
Yes, and
getting an opportunity in South Africa where nobody really has access to stuff. It was such a privilege. And this is what I was saying. Kabazela has made sure that at least gave me the chance to say, you know, I'm willing to invest for your first album.
Wow.
And then, it was produced by Africa. So for me, it really was a learning curve. Because before that time, I think I was like just teaching and I was at really my lowest point. So I was just releasing most of the music that I had when I was younger.
That was
more of a soulful tinge than jazz stuff. I've always been accused for that stuff. On the social platforms, for the things that are under my name now, after Ubaba, I did a single called Iskalo with Vuyo.
Yes.
You know Vuyo Manyike?
Yes.
Yeah, beautiful bass player. So I think he was, you know, trying to get me to the mainstream to say, man, you don't have to just do the jazz thing. So it was the single, you know, trying to do the popular thing. And then after that, I did all the... Now, with the corona season, I did another album called Asambe, which is kind of like a soulful R&B thing. And then I did, like I was saying to you, I've got an EP, which is called Vuvu's Dance. Obviously, it's a house sort of 45 BPM thing.
Yeah.
Vuvu stands, you know, dedicated to my aunt because Vuvu is her name. She's the only one that, you know, that used to bring a lot of music at the house. She's the one, she's like our Brenda Fassi. She's the one with the vibe, you know?
the one with the vibe.
Yeah. So I did some music. So it's there on your iTunes and whatever.
Yes.
And then in terms of collaborations, there's a guy called QB Smith.
I love QB.
So I did some work with him.
Mm.
There's a single called, I think it's The Nitty Gritty. It was quite an interesting thing to work with the DJ. That was the first time, you know, I'd worked with somebody in that capacity. In fact, we used to do some recordings for K-Law. There's a guy called, I've never met him, but I mean, you know, we're just doing something for Universal.
Yes.
So just because we were teaching there at the SAPC.
Yeah.
And then, like you were saying, it's okay, actually, because we used to stay together when he was doing his first album, Ionde. and we still stay in the same flat there in Utah. Mm-hmm. So by the time he won the Standard Bank Young Artist Award, we got to work on that music. It was very interesting because obviously, I mean, he had a clear idea of what he wanted to do. And, I just commented on what I thought could complement it.
Mm.
And he complimented it. And that's basically what working with each other meant.
Yeah.
And he was quite hands-on, you know.
Mm.
And, I mean, I like the fact he still believes in that project. But in fact, earlier on, even I worked a lot with Mandla. I still work with him.
Mlanje.
Yeah.
Mm.
In fact, it gave me a lot of vote of confidence in terms of composing, of being able to contribute on arranging some of his composition and putting some of my stuff there. From his earliest music, what is it? Amanda Freedom in Sam?
Yes.
Born to be Black, Voices of Our Vision. And even this one, with they were working with Africa, I came as a just to contribute the vocals there.
Hmm.
So, and another friend of ours, Ariel Zamonski, who's a bass player, normally goes with his partner Juana, so they are from Argentina, and we worked on his first album. Entre Mundos or something, Between Two Worlds.
Okay.
So I think that was in 2019. There is a guy called, is a trombone player. It's going to be pissed off at me now.
Sorry.
He's from UK.
Mm.
And he actually did a collaborative work between us and the musicians in the UK.
Mm.
And what happened is he took me and Amechi, who's a bass player in Spirit, and we played some of his compositions and contributed our stuff. So that album, I think it has just been signed to some record label there. So I think they want to release it in 2024. Mm. So that, there's some work that we did in 2019, just before the shutdown.
Yeah.
And other works, I mean, are not recorded. I did a lot of stuff with Tumsa Maswana.
Yeah.
Who's mostly based in the Eastern Cape. He's actually even a radio presenter there.
Yeah, is that true?
Oh, yeah. Now, recorded something as well with Khonzi,
Khonzi Nakhene. I actually enjoyed seeing you with Khonzi.
Yeah. No, Khonzi.
How's on the hill?
Ah, man. Because with Mandla, but as well as working with him in other guises. So he is actually, I'm sure he's long done with that album, but he's just holding on to it. I keep on calling him to say, hey, release it. So it's me and Khonzi and Lungile. And Daliso is there. I know Ndabo is there, I think. Yes, even Linda Skakan, who's really doing
great. Yes, Linda's great, is amazing. Things
there.
Yeah.
Deboho, used to call himself sex junkie because he plays the saxophone as well.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That might be easily misinterpreted, but it's saxophone.
Well, what you put in makes you who you are. Okay. So that's some of the work. You know, at school now, there's a colleague of mine who's an opera singer as well. I've been producing her work. It's not Tandazo, to do like a cross between popular music and opera.
Wow.
And I did it also during that COVID phase.
Mm.
And then, like I was saying, there's a gentleman that I'm staying with now. He's a DJ as well.
Mm.
So, I did some of my piano. So we're trying to do all kinds of things. Like I'm saying, we are the results of all these other things. We are the quintessential manifestation of cosmopolitanism. And we have to welcome it like that. We shouldn't allow them to define us according to who we are not.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's some
you.
Of the work that
so...
I'm doing. I mean, I'm thinking now that I'm studying a choir, there's so much of a backlog because I've been working with a lot of with the kids also in Katlehong. And I think I'd like to document some of that work. Of course, now with Mandam Langen, we were doing the oratorium of a forgotten youth, Nanana, at the first grade hall that he released. And it's got some of those children recorded as well, which I arranged. So yeah, I'm really, really grateful.
I love that for you, and you sound like you're such a collaborator when it comes to the work that you do, which is such a beautiful trait for anyone to have. You know?
And I did something. No. I think who's this? Go with Kenzero.
Kenzero, yeah.
Kenzero, they're doing some production. I don't even know what they're calling it. I'm sure they're gonna put it at the end because it's a solo piano thing. But they haven't yet released it. I can't wait for it to come out. Oh, and I did a thing. No. With Bokani.
Bokani Daya, of course. Yeah.
And I just did one song. It's called Hotalo. You'll see that in the album. I think it's called Radio Sichaba.
Yes, the new one. Yeah.
I think it's track 11 or so.
Oh, amazing! So I'll look out for it.
Yeah. So you know, I never really get to remember.
You are so busy.
No.
You're a busy man.
But I think you know, it's better to be busy than not to be doing anything.
Yeah, I love that. You know? Yeah.
So, yeah, more chances. I'd still like to, you know, to record fully-fledged jazz album, maybe one or two. And like I was saying, I want to do that production for Steve Kekana as well. So those are some of the future stuff. And I want to recapture, like I was saying, the stuff that I used to do. In Katlehong, some of the music that I've composed there. And I'd like to do an a cappella album as well.
Oh, please do it.
Yeah, I want to do it.
I will be eagerly awaiting for that one. Sure, Yonela, you are so inspiring, man. I think
this conversation. My degree,
so. Yeah, of course. Of course. This conversation has inspired me to no ends. But I ask all of my guests that come on Coffee Conversations this question. And I always find that it always leaves my mind blown. What sits at the core of your soul?
Wow, man. I actually haven't thought about it like that. But because the soul has always been the core in itself, you know? But like you're saying, you know, it depends on whether we think about the soul as something that encompasses everything spiritually and physical as well. But yeah, I think there's nothing beyond the love and the truth, you know? And being able to be honest to it. Honest to that center. I think for me, being able to be aware of what is happening now with me. I mean, consciousness really is the best thing that can ever happen to someone. To me. I'm really curious of myself, you know? Because a human being is an amazing thing because he is as much as a consumer as he is a producer. So there's always that idea of newness, newnessness that is always there all the time. The fact that we keep on breathing in and out and to be able to marvel at that happening for me is the rawest thing ever. I like seeing it for what it is. If we can, you know, you can have an experience that, I think I'm getting angry or I'm getting happy or I'm getting... That awareness helps you to appreciate yourself. And in appreciating yourself, you're able to appreciate other people because, you know, they probably go through the same process. You know? And that's why, or vice versa, appreciating other people helps you to start seeing other things that are in yourself too. So, sure. So it works both ways. So I think for me, that really is the highest nature of, highest level of meditation.
Mm.
It's not just about moving away from all the noise, but it is even just appreciating what it is, because your body is experiencing that.
Huh.
And your body and like you're saying, your spirituality. Also, I think redefining a language that is relevant in explaining who you are.
Mm.
I think we always speak up about ourselves in languages that are not relevant to ourselves. And perhaps the distinction between the spiritual and the physical and the psychological is not necessarily necessary.
Mm.
Perhaps if we start understanding that our hands, you know, our hands and our mouths are probably an extension of a spiritual manifestation, will help us to respect the stuff that we have.
Mm.
Because we don't understand it as something separate from the spirit.
Wow. You know?
If we understand that these things are the vessels of us.
Mm-hmm.
Paxton Mlangen always says, you know, people, they always say seeing is believing.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, touch is truth.
Huh.
You know, if we can understand what we mean when we touch each other,
huh,
when we hold each other. I mean, I've been in Joburg for a long time. And I find that there is something that I've learned in holding somebody's hand.
Hmm.
Because that is a manifestation of trust.
Mm.
Because that hand can either mislead you or can take you to safety.
Wow.
So I think maybe that's at the core of the soul, is the fact that this world helped me to develop trust than to lose it.
Sure. And I get exactly what you're saying in the most figurative and literal sense.
Because
mm. I remember the first time I met you, you touched me and there was a warmth
mm.
in your touch.
Mm. Mm.
And I love that mm. you're saying, mm. you know, I have learned to trust you, because you're either going to lead me to the right direction or mislead me. So in closing, what are you looking forward to the most on your journey? You know, whether it's a personal journey or your journey as a musician, what are the things that you're looking forward to the most?
I think, you know, I'm hoping to ask myself what more I can do, you know, what more can my body do? What more can my spirit lead me to?
Hmm.
I think sometimes, most of the times, because we're living mechanically, you know, we don't tend to listen to ourselves.
Mm.
So now I feel that I'm at the point where I have to ask myself, without lying to myself, to check whether I'm really, really honest
mm.
with what I'm saying. If, you know, whether what I'm playing is exactly what I want to say,
mm.
or whether I'm just doing it mechanically away from myself. Because remember that we tend to perform a lot. And perform, I mean, even just what we say can be a performance.
Mm.
We tend to play to the gallery than to play to our own spirit.
Mm.
So I want to learn to redefine, you know, my industriousness,
mm.
whether I'm able to, because I really believe more in, you know, in legacy building. Mm. I would rather have an opportunity to allow the music to be the soundtrack to our lives than just to be a product that is entertaining.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm just praying that, it, you know, I'm able to be as honest to that ideal
mm.
as possible. Whether I'll be able to be prepared to live or die for that kind of ideal.
Hmm.
You know?
Mm.
How far are we willing to go, to be honest, to the instruments and to the bodies that we have
mm.
and to the drives that we have in this funny environment that we're in.
Wow.
So that at least our children are able to benefit from those things
mm.
in more ways than one.
Mm.
so that at least, like I was saying too, so that perhaps the other ones that are learning after us will be able to be much more privileged that what they're learning is something that has been developed in the same places that, you know, that they are breathing in.
Hmm.
I mean, see, think about a lot of dynamics that we get to hear in a lot of music that we get to listen to. I know, for example, with my son, he was so happy to see the snow because it's an ideal that has been planted in his mind from what he sees on TV, you know? How far are we able to lay out other ideals that our people can attain now without thinking about them as distant possibilities, you know? So we need to make sure that the people that come after us receive the softest possible landing that we can supply.
Wow. Yonela, thank you so, so much for having coffee with me on Coffee Conversations. It has been such an enlightening conversation, just sharing this space with you and, you know, getting to tap into your mind and your spirit is, wow, it's done so much for me today. And I hope that it does the same for listeners of this podcast, people that will be hearing you and continue to follow your music and your performances and, you know, just your brilliance. Thank you so much for joining me.
It's such a privilege, actually. I mean, when I look at the email and I follow the link, I'm like, hey, I cannot pass up this opportunity. I mean, the people that you were talking to are great company. In fact, like we were talking about communities of knowledge, just with those interviews, already you've just built a community of knowledge just by having them. So it means now you're playing a different role. You're not just generating knowledge, but you've built a platform that has a potential for a lot of other great things. We're able to say when people ask about South African music, just to the coffee platform to say, this is it. You don't, everything has been put together for you there. Because we need more. So this is like it has become an institution. And I hope that, it garners you much more better and more reception. And that we can be able to be proud about it. Now I'm going to become much more fond of coffee again. And hopefully we'll have other installments in some time to come.
100%.
To reflect. I think most of the time, we're just talking. But we never get to reflect again to check what kind of mindset we were in at that time. So it's something that we need to actually do. I'm sure you could do that, actually, to have a reloaded kind of version where you go to...
Oh, yes, 100%. Yeah. I receive that affirmation for all its intents and purposes. I receive it wholeheartedly, and I thank you so much. Thank you for listening to Coffee Conversations. This is me, Vivian Machweni-Chweni, signing out with the amazing Yonela Mnana. Please do not forget to share the link with your friends. Subscribe. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Google. We are on Spotify. We're also on YouTube. Please do continue to listen to the conversations that we bring you. Please do continue to like, share, and subscribe. And until next time, thank you so much.